This is RÚV English Radio with Darren Adam, daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.
Hello, it's RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam. Thanks very much for joining us today. It's a Monday afternoon, time for an episode of The Week in Iceland, focusing quite a lot on the weekend, really. Not so much in Iceland, but in Malmö, in Sweden, the grand final of the Eurovision Song Contest. Iceland was not there, of course. Iceland was ejected from the competition at the semi-final stage, and it turns out that Iceland's entry was in fact the least popular of all the countries competing in any stage of the event. The Week in Iceland today with my colleague here at RÚV, Pieter Magnusson. Hello again, Pieter.
Hello, Darren.
Let's talk about that first then. Heri Björk, who did splendidly. There was nothing wrong with the performance last Tuesday at all. Nothing wrong with the song, nothing wrong with the way she sang, but the least successful entry.
It does seem to be a low point. And her entry into the competition has been very controversial ever since she won Söngvakeppnin a few months back. But yeah, the song, it's fundamentally just like a harmless pop song, but yeah, it didn't seem to excite anyone who was listening, not here or in Malmö or anywhere else in Europe, apparently.
It won 3 points in total, which was the lowest number of points out of any of the countries that took part in either of the semi-finals. In the past, Iceland has come bottom before, while not qualifying. And then before there were semi-finals in 1989, Iceland did get the dreaded 0 points, nil points.
Yes.
But to get 3 points, it's obviously worse than 15. It is the least successful entry ever. I don't think it deserved that fate. I mean, that's the fate you reserve for something that was terrible, and it wasn't terrible.
It wasn't actively terrible, and the person who wrote the song tends to write quite catchy pop music, and Hera Björk has been quite popular among Eurovision watchers for a very long time. So this seems to have been just a row of instances that just completely doomed Hera, and maybe unfairly, maybe fairly, who's to judge?
Well, as we say, no one can look at that performance and say that it was faulty in any way or that the song was bad. It was a very unfortunate set of circumstances. A very, very controversial contest, of course, this year for obvious reasons. And when you've got this kind of division and these sorts of very strongly held opinions, well, I get the sense that whatever Iceland did, whatever any country did, whatever position anyone took, about half of that country would be unhappy.
Absolutely. Even here, after the competition, people are saying that, this is all going to be political.
Yeah,
it's just, what do you think is apolitical? People are talking about that. If Israel would have won, that would have been sort of a great thing, because that would show support to Israel. Some people say it would be great because then it would mean the end of the Eurovision Song Contest forever, because it would be a completely
unthinkable that it would happen in Israel next year. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But then, I think you're going to say on the other hand, mm-hmm. You've got people who absolutely would not have wanted to show support for Israel for their political reasons, because mm-hmm. they're looking at what's happening in Gaza.
Absolutely.
A very clear division, and a very binary division as well. So whatever happened was going to leave a lot of people unhappy. Iceland, I suppose, not really part of that by being out of the competition as early as it was, in a way.
Maybe not early enough.
Well, yeah, that's the other view, that, you know, maybe Iceland should not have entered at all. And there are plenty of people who take that particular view. Eurovision 2025 will take place in Switzerland. Who knows where we'll be by then? But the speed with which time seems to, maybe I'm just getting old, but the speed with which time seems to go past, it won't be long before we're talking about Söngvakeppnin again.
And that's going to be an interesting conversation. We're a part of the organization that throws Söngvakeppnin. So we get to be a part of that sort of internal conversation, at least have a say in it and listen to what's coming. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see where we go from here, because there's a lot of things that have to be addressed before we continue and want to participate next.
Let's remember, of course, that Söngvakeppnin in this cycle, it was separated from Eurovision. So the winner of Söngvakeppnin was just the winner of Söngvakeppnin. Yeah. In every other year, of course, that's been the way that we've selected Iceland's Eurovision entry. That wasn't necessarily the case this year, although that's how it turned out.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see if will the people in charge continue that development of separating Sungakeppnin and from Eurovision and making that sort of its own thing. We'll see.
One of my favourite Google Translate translations, if you run text through Google Translate, it sometimes comes up with something which is nonsense. It sometimes comes up with something very poetic. Whenever land is rising, whenever the earth is rising before an eruption or before a magma flow, Google Translate describes that as a land giant.
A land
giant. Isn't that great? There's a land giant growing.
I think it's a... Yeah, it's very poetic. It's also poetry. Also just in line with sort of the Icelandic folk beliefs, believing that there's a giant.
I think it's wonderful. And of course, the word is landris, which means land rise. The land is rising, and it is rising again. Of course, difficulties over the weekend because this solar storm that brought northern lights to every part of the planet, apart from Iceland, it seemed, because it was too cloudy and too bright. The solar storm interrupted the machinery that measures the rate of the land rise. So we know that land is rising. We know the land giant is growing again at Svartsengi. We just don't know by how much. Long story short, we could still be looking at another eruption very soon.
Yeah, and it's as you say, it's been very magical with solar storms and land giants. But it's been a few days since the last eruption officially ended. So we've started preparing for the next one. It's probably not going to be too long until we're back at it.
And when the previous eruption was taking place, which was the second longest lasting eruption out of the last six, actually, the one that's just ended, at first we thought, well, as long as that's erupting, it means there won't be another one further down the pipe. But of course, that then changed.
Yeah, these eruptions, even though they're becoming a regular fixture of our schedule, here at the roof, the nuances keep changing. Now there was a possibility that there would be two eruptions at the same time, and debates about whether we should call that two different eruptions or a single eruption.
Where did we land on that? Was there a decision?
I don't think so. I don't think we had to make a decision that was public. We were ready to make the decision when it happened, and then we could ask experts.
But you're right, it's the nuances changing, it's the rules changing, because we got into a groove, didn't we, of thinking, well, there's going to be an eruption every month that'll last for a couple of hours or a couple of days, and as long as that's taking place, we don't need to look anywhere else. That's gone out of the window.
We're always seeing that we really don't know that much.
No, we don't. So all eyes on Svartsengi, of course, and again, our thoughts, obviously, with the people of Grindavik, who are utterly fed up with this, whether or not they've decided to sell their property, whether or not they've decided to evacuate the town, whether or not they hope to return one day. The last thing that is needed is for this thing to go off again.
Absolutely, and every time it happens, it's adding grey onto an already very grey position. And they're now starting to talk about that maybe we'll be able to see the response from the government in the next few weeks. And I know that many people in Grindavik just want to punch a wall all day.
What do you think ultimately is going to happen? It's really hard to tell because everyone's got a different view on this, but there are still some people in and from Grindavik who will want to return to the town and want to take the chance, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And there are businesses who will want to return. I think there's a majority that won't want to return, simply because we don't know how long this event will last. Like we were just talking about, this keeps changing. The logic of the eruption keeps seemingly changing, at least from our perspective. So we don't know if this is going to be just for a few years or decades. So we have no idea how safe it will be to run a big business or to have a family in Grindavik 15 years from now.
And it's not the eruption even, it is the earthquake. Of course, which is what did the damage to the town.
The earthquakes, and there are now unknown holes in the ground. Yeah. The earth has been tearing itself apart for years now. So we don't know.
Well, one of the stories that came from this, that it got a great response, as you can imagine, because it's a rather wonderful story. This is a 13-year-old boy called Hreðar Leo Wilhelmsson from the largely evacuated town of Grindavík, who now spends most of his spare time drawing houses of the town. He drew a picture of his own family home, which had been evacuated, gave it to his mum as a Christmas present. The townspeople in Grindavík thought, I quite fancy one of those if he can do a drawing of my house as well. So he's got computer images and he's got the plans of all the homes. And I think he's done about 20 of these drawings for people in Grindavík.
And these are really lovely drawings.
They're tremendous.
They're really beautiful. And I can see why people would want to have them, because it's, it's sentimental on so many levels. And this talented, smart kid who found a way to make people happy with his art. That's perfect.
Yeah, he's getting lots of gratitude. He says, when he did the first one, he found it very enjoyable. He wanted to do more. It occurred to me to offer it to others because it would be nice for people to have a picture of their home, the house that they might not return to. And he does this only with a pencil and an eraser and a ruler. And he's got, as I say, computer images of all the houses. So he doesn't need to go and sit outside them to draw them.
Which is also great. We want to empower this kid to continue.
I think he's got a very bright future.
Absolutely.
Whatever he chooses to do. Someone whose future has become a little bit brighter is Hatla Tomasdottir. She is one of the 12 presidential candidates. She has more than doubled her support in the latest opinion poll survey, which is from Procent, which I think is from Morgenblad. And she is not one of the top five, but she's the top four rather, but she's getting into that. She's doubled her support to, if I can just find that, 12.5%. So she is number five now. She's fifth on the list.
Yeah, for the majority of this election cycle or this campaign, we've had four candidates who've been let's say they've been had a secure lead on all the other candidates. But Hatla Tomasdottir is now sort of emerging as the fifth candidate. We'll see how far she goes. But in 2016, the last time she ran, because she was also running in 2016 against Guðni, who eventually became the president, and had a very similar trajectory. She was polling at maybe 1% a month before the election, maybe 6 weeks before the elections.
Yeah.
And then ended up getting almost 30% of the popular vote. And being the second, which is why she's been very calm, even though she's been polling quite low so far.
This race could go anywhere. You've given an example of how the position has changed very quickly before. It doesn't seem that long since a lot of people were saying, if Katrin Jakobsdottir runs, then she's unbeatable. That was the position that everyone held for a couple of days. And then, of course, we had Baldur Thorhallsson, who was the front runner for a while.
And then the meteoric rise of Hallarind Glódóttir.
The other Hatla, yes. who came in and is now in pole position. She's at 26% on this survey. Katrin, 19.2. Baldur, 17.9. Jón Gnarr, 13.8. And then Hatla Tomasdottir on 12.5. All of that could change between now and the end of
the month. Absolutely. We're not only seeing differences between sort of the same poll over time, but even different polling companies are showing some differences. So I think there are a lot of people who are very undecided. Mm-hmm. And because of the nature of the race, because it's not it tends not to be about hard policy positions, but more about sort of how presidential they are. It's about vibes. So your opinion about who you're going to vote for is more malleable, is more susceptible to change and influences in things.
And one of those influences has been the first Rúv debate that took place about 10 days ago, another one coming up just before the election at the end of the month. But I wonder whether you think, are voters going to sort of crowd round favourites as we get closer? Or are we going to see a president elected with maybe, 27% of the vote or something?
I think no matter who wins, it's not going to be a majority. We're never going to see a president with more than 50%. Even I think even 40% is very optimistic for any candidate. But what I think will be the deciding factor now is, will voters rally around the person who's most likely to beat Katrín Jakobsdóttir, because she is very popular among some people,
yes,
but very unpopular among others. While Halla Hrund, for instance, has a more sort of broader support across demographics. And she's looking like the person to beat Katrín Jakobsdóttir if that's going to happen. So I think that the deciding factor is going to be if voters who are unhappy with Katrín Jakobsdóttir and really don't want her to be president will find the candidate to support, or because Halla Hrund became very popular quite early, and
yes,
we're already seeing forces in Icelandic society reacting to that, and we're seeing some more sort of negative press about Halla, if that's gonna affect her standing. So I think that's going to be a very important factor in the next days and weeks.
One of the candidates, I forget whom, it might be more than one, has suggested that in future presidential elections there should be a runoff to guarantee that whoever wins does ultimately get more than 50%. So you'd have one round of voting and then you'd take the top three or the top two forward or whatever. And I wonder if after this election that's going to become a more popular idea anyway.
It might be. We just saw another smaller election about the bishop of the Icelandic National Church, which seems to have sort of a more rigorous process of electing bishop than we have for president, because then you need, if you don't get a majority of the votes, you go into to a sort of duel, just like in Söngakeppnin.
Yes.
but even if it's a popular idea, it would have to come through the constitutional changes, which are really difficult to get through. So that might not happen until, in maybe 8 or 10 years,
yes,
even if it gets popular support.
Because the Icelandic constitution, it's not exactly chiseled into a tablet of stone, but it nearly is. It's very difficult to change, isn't it?
It's somehow both very vague and sort of, it's like a soft constitution, but still very difficult to change.
Yes. Okay. Let's look ahead to 2026. I think we touched on the Northern Lights a few moments ago and the fact that they were invisible in Iceland. But something that will be visible very much so on the 12th of August 2026 is a solar eclipse, a total solar eclipse. We had a partial one in Iceland about 6 weeks ago. In 2026, though, this will be total. And the western side of the country, so the Westfjords, capital region, Snæfellsnes, that western chunk of the country will have a total eclipse and will witness a total eclipse. And already one astronomer is saying he thinks the country is going to be completely sold out. There won't be a hotel room anywhere in the country around that time.
I mean, it sounds plausible. There was a solar eclipse sort of total solar eclipse in the US and around sort of Dallas area, I know, and I know that many hotels there were booked. I'm not that familiar with this particular type of tourism, but it's all here in sort of, you can probably see it in Reykjavik. I think I saw a map there.
Yes.
And also in the Westfjords.
Yeah. Well, here it is. I've got the map here and you can see that the capital region, Westfjords, And particularly, I would say the best place, if I've got that map correct, is probably Ólafsvík.
Yeah, maybe Ólafsvík, maybe Snæfellsnes.
Yeah.
Or Vestfjörð, like Vestfjörðs, Patreksfjörður, or something like that.
Yes.
I don't think it's going to be a very pleasant time to be in Reykjavík, if it turns out, because already in August, it's very very crowded. So maybe I'll go to the Eastfjords or something.
We this year are going to drive around the Westfjords for a couple of weeks rather than going abroad. And if you want to stay in a fairly standard, nice enough but fairly standard hotel in, say, Ísafjörð in July or August, then you will pay as much as you will pay for a hotel room in London or New York or Los Angeles. Because it is such a popular place to go. And that wouldn't have been the case even 20 years ago, that people wouldn't have travelled around the Westfjords in the same sort of numbers that they do now.
Oh, absolutely not. Like my family is from the Westfjords, and tourism there didn't seem a possibility. Maybe 20 years ago. You're right.
But now it very much is.
Absolutely.
Yes. And is it welcomed, do you think, in the Westfjords? Because that, you know, it always felt like a slightly different part of the country. And even now, to an extent, the Westfjords feels a bit more like Iceland than the rest of the country did maybe 20 years ago, say.
Yeah, I mean, my uneducated guess would be no, because the people around me are really unhappy with overpopulism or over tourism.
Sure.
With massive sort of cruise ships docking in, for instance, Ísafjörður, and the town being overrun with tourists for 10 hours who might not be buying much, might just be using the bathrooms and looking at things without actually sort of engaging with the community. It doesn't really feel great for the people who live there.
No, and I've not been to Ísafjörður when those cruise ships have been there, but you see a photo of this gigantic ship in the harbour there, almost towering over the mountains.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very, very dramatic and weird for people who are just used to seeing small fishing boats there.
Yes. All right, well, we shall see if on the 12th of August 2026 that is the case. Peter, thanks very much indeed for joining me on The Week in Iceland here on RÚV English Radio. I'm Darren Adam, and you can get in touch with us anytime. We are english@ruv.is.
There is more from RÚV English, with all the news from Iceland in English at ruv.is/English. RÚV English Radio is a daily English language radio from Iceland's national broadcaster, RÚV.